I need him alive. Not for redemption. To stop a war.
Vex's eye patch was toward her so she couldn't read his face, but the muscle in his arm coiled under her fingers.
If I faced the people who did what they did to me, Vex started, I'd kill them. I've dreamed of it for years.
He looked at her, and it surprised Lou to find not anger on his face, but sadness. Vex twisted so he held her arm as she held his.
You're asking me to let him live, knowing what he did to you. You want me to show him mercy?
I don't want to kill him, Lou admitted. I want him to break. That's what I most fear. If I see him on that ship without propriety holding me back, I won't...
She stopped, chin dropping. I won't survive the things I'd do to him. I could never look Teo in the eyes again or pretend to serve this island with dignity. I'd be what I was during the revolution. I cannot be a murderer again. She didn't weep as she said this. She told him and let the words hover. Vex didn't show any reaction, not shock or pain.
For what it's worth, he said. I know you aren't capable of being what your parents turned you into again.
How could you know that?
He smiled.
I didn't become what people wanted me to be either.
He drew her closer before letting go so she could retreat. She didn't.
We're stronger than they could have dreamed. You are stronger. Come with me or don't. It's your choice.
With a wink and a smile, he leaped from the rapid meander, grabbed the lowest porthole, and began climbing the galleon.
Go, Nayeli said. You'll hate yourself if you stay here.
Lou looked at her through the pilot house's window.
I could hate myself if I go, too.
Nayeli shook her head.
We both know that's a lie.
A wave broke on the railing, spraying foam across Lou's boots. If she followed Vex onto that ship, and the person she fought so hard not to be resurfaced, she would hate herself. But if she stayed and hid in the engine room with Teo, she would hate herself more, for the fear she would continue to let rule her life. Lou adjusted the satchel around her shoulders, checked her weapons, and propelled herself onto the side of the galleon. No time to think. No time to worry. Nowhere to go but forward. Vex was glad to have this bright spot of hatred for Milo Ibarra as he climbed the exterior of the galleon. He focused on that, where his mind wanted to spiral out of control. He recognized this ship. It was one of Eleazar's.
No. Ibarra.
Find Ibarra and murder him.
He wouldn't, though, for Lou's sake, but God, give him 10 minutes alone with that disgusting excuse for a man, and he'd have Ibarra begging for death.
Vex heard a rustling against the waves crashing, and when he looked, Lou was climbing up the ship below him. He hadn't expected her to stay on the meander. She was the strongest force he'd known. She'd find a way to get through. But seeing her eased a knot of tension. He wouldn't have to board this ship alone. This ship. One he'd been on before. Vex kept climbing, unable to tell whether he was shaking from his illness or terror. He and Lou would find Ibarra, or other proof of this insanity, and get off before anything happened. They'd stop the war before Argrid could sink its claws back into Grace Loray. Before... Lou plopped onto the deck seconds after him and scurried over to where he crouched behind a longboat. Even terrified, he couldn't help it. He grinned at her.
I figured I couldn't let you go alone, she whispered. You are, after all, dying of a condition that makes you unstable.
Vex rolled his eye.
Had to bring that up, did you?
They both faced the deck. Three guards could be seen on the rear quarterdeck, two more pacing along the forecastle deck. The main deck dipped between the two, low enough that Vex and Lou could hide along the wall, sneak to the central hatch, and drop below decks without arousing attention. We should start with the lower decks,
Lou whispered.
Work our way up. Take anything you find, correspondence, vials that could be Eleazar's test potions, anything. We'll have to go to the council after this, no matter what.
She moved before Vex said anything, not that he could have. Staircases lined the wall below the quarter deck, a door between them, the way to the captain's quarters. The central hatch was ahead of that door, a straight shot once the guards on the forecastle deck turned. Vex slammed next to the door seconds after Lou did, panting like he'd run laps around the deck. She grabbed his wrist, and while it was probably to make sure they timed their sprint to the hatch, Vex leaned into it. Lou shot forward, Vex stumbling behind. The central hatch thudded open. Light flooded the main deck as a man climbed the steps. Lou froze, cursing. But it wasn't Milo Ibarra. The man held a lantern to illuminate some paper he was reading. He didn't notice Vex and Lou until he stood on the main deck. He snapped his head up. Lou drew a blade, the knife catching the lantern light with a flash. The man didn't look at her knife. His attention was rooted on Vex, who stared back, seeing through 6 years of absence, of dreams, of pain and death. He remembered this ship. He remembered standing on it with his father and this man, who had been a boy not much older than himself, before the world burned to ashes in front of a cheering crowd. Vex was aware of Lou looking between them. Vex? What? The man didn't shout or raise an alarm. He said a name, soft and imploring, from 100 lifetimes ago.
Haxbin?
29. Ben was 7, clambering through the gardens of Rodrigo's mansion in Deza. Ahead, a hedge rustled and a body leaped through. A thin, wispy boy 2 months younger than Ben, but a whole head taller.
Got you!
Paxbin shouted and hurled a harmless cluster of leaves at Ben's chest. Ben laughed as it fluttered to the ground.
No, act like it's variegated holly. You're supposed to do this.
Paxben flailed, eyes dipping back so the whites showed. He stuck out his tongue, which made Ben giggle more. A shadow passed over them.
Where did you learn that?
Ben looked up at his uncle Rodrigo and sobered. Paxben, though, never sobered, a wellspring of energy that Ben got to wade in.
At the university, Paxben told his father. It's magic. I know about the other ones, too. Drooping Fern and Eye of the Sun and Croxy and—
Paxbin,
Rodrigo reprimanded.
You shouldn't speak of these things.
Why not?
He whined.
You speak of them all the time.
Later, Ben would think back on interactions like this and realize Rodrigo's intensity hadn't been righteous condemnation. It had been fear. Ben and Paxbin were 12, and they joked about his name, Pax Ben, and how it bound him to Ben more than Rodrigo was bound to Eleazar.
You'll help me when I'm king, too,
Ben said as they sat on a bridge in the university's complex, feet dangling over a gurgling brook. Paxbin folded his arms, body woven through the railing as Ben's was, and rested his chin on the cushion his elbows made. He was quiet for too long. Ben started to worry until Paxbin beamed at him.
Of course, he said. I'll be right next to you. You'll be the best king.
Ben shook his head.
Not better than my father.
Paxbin kicked his legs faster.
I'll take over my father's position. We'll be Irmans side by side, helping Argrid.
Ben grinned.
We already are Irmans.
Brothers.
Ben was 13, crouched against the keyhole to his father's study.
Rodrigo freed war prisoners. He bought and sold Grace Lorraine's evil magic. He was an ally of our enemies, a traitor to the crown, a tool of the devil. And his son was, too.
They wouldn't let Ben see either Rodrigo or Paxben in the holding cells. Defensors barred him at the door, Eleazar comforting him with a hand on his shoulder.
I tried to reason with your uncle and cousin,
Eleazar said.
They are beyond redemption. The pious god rewards those who uphold his purity at the cost of great personal suffering. We must expunge Rodrigo's and Paxben's souls, Benyat. And the pious god will bless you for the pain you feel.
Ben didn't see either of them until the burning. Eleazar allowed him to watch from as close as he liked. For catharsis, his father had said. Ben stood at the front of the horde.
Nos purificar!
People screamed. Purify us. Others.
Kemar os heraxes!
Burn the heretics. Ben watched church defensors drag Rodrigo out of the wagon they used to transport the condemned from the holding cells. He was no longer the vivacious mountain of a man who had thundered after Ben and Paxben as they played hide-and-seek in the gardens. No longer the resolute politician who had guided Eleazar through the ongoing revolution on Grace Lorraine. He was now what the church had uncovered his soul to be. Impure. Purple bruises rimmed both eyes. Lacerations and dried blood covered his body. He stumbled, so weak that defensors had to carry him. He didn't speak, though, until they dragged out Paxben. Bile rose in Ben's throat. Paxben spat and kicked against the defensors. Shackles bound his wrists and cloth covered his mouth, drawing Ben's attention to the marking on Paxben's face. No, not a marking. As Paxben fought, the blood-covered bandage slipped, revealing gashes through his eye. Rodrigo screamed, begged.
Let him go! Asensio, for the love of God, don't do this!
Ben looked back, over the long expanse of people between the front of the crowd and the steps of Grace Neo's Cathedral. There his father stood, too distant for Ben to see if he reacted to Rodrigo using his first name. He was glad that defensors had gagged Paxben. Defensors flung Rodrigo against a stake and looped rope around his body. He turned toward Paxben, who had to be tossed back into the wagon so the defensors could regain control.
Let him go!
Rodrigo shrieked as they yanked a bag over his head. Defensors dragged Paxben out of the wagon again, a bag over his head now too. Dishonor defined. They tied him to a stake next to his father, and a defensor with a torch approached. The smoke stung Ben's nose. The man passed Rodrigo but didn't light his pyre. Rodrigo's hysteria broke.
Don't kill my son!
Ben drew in the stench of smoke, holding it when his stomach heaved.
They are heretics, Benyat,
his father had said before they'd left the palace that morning.
As you watch, remember that. We will be blessed from the pain of sacrificing them.
Ben watched his uncle and cousin burn to death. He imprinted every flame in his mind and used the heat to scald out the pain. If the pious god could make blessings come from that pain, he didn't want it. Nothing good was worth Paxben's and Rodrigo's deaths. Ben had watched them burn. He had watched them die. It was a dream, standing on the deck of the Astuto, the world drenched in black but for the lantern in his hand that chased the shadows from the faces of the two people before him. A woman he didn't know, and a man. Ben had spent 6 years trying to forget that face, and it was older now, so maybe it was a trick. But his heart pushed out a name that was a prayer he'd sworn to never utter again.
Paxben?
The man, ghost, smiled because Paxben would smile. Because few of Ben's memories of him existed without a radiance that rivaled the sun. Reality rushed at Ben and he shifted back, bumping into someone coming up the stairs behind him. Iacchus settled a hand on his hip. Ben didn't have the strength to push him off.
My prince?
Iacchus said.
What?
Chaos.
Yakis shouting, "Intruders!"
Lanterns illuminating the deck and weapons rattling and feet pounding. Paxben's sad, broken smile remained.
"Ben,"
he finally said. Defensors grabbed his arms.
"Erman."
30. The Argridians stripped them of their weapons and Lu's satchel, which she forced herself to let them take. She could replace the objects within, even the family stone from the Tunkian sanctuary. Still, she hated the thought of the Argridians having it. The cell where the defensors imprisoned her and Vex was clean, unused, letting Lu feel only annoyance at how close they were to the rapid meander. Through that wall, up, within swimming distance. Had Nayeli heard the uproar? Did she know the Argridians had caught them? Focusing on those minor things helped steady Lu. The last time she had been at the mercy of defensors had been during the revolution, when Tom had scalded into her mind the importance of avoiding anyone wearing Navy uniforms with the white curved V and crossed swords. Now, not only was she a prisoner of the Argridians, she was at the mercy of the Crown Prince himself, the man who had recognized Vex. Lu listened as the defensor's footsteps receded up the wooden stairs before she rounded on Vex. He had gone pale, his eye on the hall before their cell's bars as though he expected the prince to materialize at any moment. Anything Lu had been about to yell died to a soft whisper.
"That wasn't a ruse? You weren't playing along to buy us time?"
her voice broke.
"You truly know the Crown Prince of Argrid?"
Vex nodded.
"Yes."
A real response, not a quip or a wink or a vulgar comeback.
"He called you Paxben," Lu tried.
Vex came too with a piercing glare.
"Paxben died 6 years ago."
6 years ago. The revolution had been underway, so any news that did not directly involve the war hadn't taken priority. But Lu remembered her parents and other leaders giving a moment of silence one morning. The king's brother had led a cell of revolution sympathizers in Argrid, they'd said. Defensors had discovered his treachery and burned him, along with his son. Lu hadn't cared. Why should she mourn the death of an Argridian royal when she watched his people destroy her island every day?
"Rodrigo,"
she said the name her parents had whispered. Vex closed his eye, the name driving into him as though she'd screamed it.
"Your father,"
she guessed. Which made Vex the cousin of the Crown Prince of Argrid. The nephew of the king. Vex had always found it fitting that he'd left Argrid on a ship. When he'd landed on Grace Luray and been shoved into one of the church's prisons, he'd felt as though the foundation of the earth had turned to water. Nothing was solid. Nothing was secure. Until he'd gotten out of that hell and found his own future. He wasn't Paxben. He was Devereaux Bell, notorious stream raider, wanted the island over. He hadn't survived everything he'd been through, only to be taken down by... He remembered the look on Ben's face. Shock. Hope.
"I know what you're thinking,"
Vex said, meeting Lou's eyes with desperate certainty.
"I'm not an Argridian spy or a church plant. My uncle wanted me to be. That's why he faked my death and dropped me on this island and waited to see whether I'd live or die. Well, I didn't do either of those things. I became someone else."
"You had to obey him, though,"
Lu filled in the pieces.
"Because he poisoned you. He was looking for the cure, too. Like you said,
I'm no more loyal to Eleazar than you are to Milo Ibarra,"
Vex snapped.
"That's all. It doesn't change a damn thing."
Lu deflated.
"It does, Devereaux."
"Devereaux," he relaxed.
"Does your crew know?"
she asked. He nodded.
It was how I met Etta. She was in the same godforsaken prison where Eleazar dumped me in Northern Grace Lorraine. We got out together.
His tension eased.
Nay didn't care. She's got her own painful history, as you've seen.
Footsteps thumped down the stairs. Vex went rigid, his mind blanking, and he was more grateful than he could say when Lou angled in front of him, as though she might soften the force of whatever was coming. A contingent stomped down the hall. The defensor who had raised the alarm led the way, and when they stopped, he hesitated, as though he was reluctant to reveal his charge. But Ben shoved him away.
Defensor Rayan, leave. Now. All of you, get out.
Each word was a dagger in proper Argridian, the heft and point of a man who would be obeyed. Vex was almost impressed. Last he'd seen Ben, he'd been a timid, obedient boy who'd have jumped into the ocean if Eleazar had asked it of him. The defensors filed out. Rayan bowed.
My prince,
he said, and stalked up the stairs. Water hummed against the hall as Ben stepped up to the cell. A tangle of nerves compelled Vex to get a handle on this situation. He moved around Lou, keeping his posture relaxed as he leaned one shoulder on the bars.
Leadership agrees with you,
Vex said in Argridian. Ben's face went rigid.
6 years.
Vex's heart sank into his gut.
I watched you burn.
Ben gripped the bars in tight, white knuckles. He didn't pay any attention to Lou, his energy on Vex.
I made myself stand there until you were nothing but a charred corpse. And that's all you say to me? What should I say?
Vex hated that his voice broke.
Your father is a tyrant so blinded by religion that he had your uncle murdered and your cousin banished.
Ben's lips parted. Vex waited, expecting him to scream heresy. But he didn't. He put his forehead to the bars, eyes closed.
He's here.
A long, slow drain tapped out Vex's resolve. The last thing he'd seen in Argrid had been his uncle, standing on the steps of Grace Neus Cathedral moments before he'd had Rodrigo burned. Every time Argridian bullies showed up and threatened Vex, he'd done whatever they'd asked him, because all he could see when he closed his eye was Eleazar, standing under carvings of sins and graces, smiling. A spasm swept over Vex, jarring him so hard his teeth rattled, but he covered it by raking his hand through his hair. Ben felt the vibration along the bars and looked up.
The defensors sent for him,
Ben continued.
He's likely already climbing aboard.
He walked away, padding back up the staircase. Vex stiffened as though every muscle was linked again to his cousin, his Erman. They'd snuck into the kitchens in the middle of the night and eaten so many imported chocolates that they'd been sick for days. They'd climbed up as high as they could in the Grace Neus Towers and dared each other to crawl out on the cupolas. It had devastated Vex to think Ben could be like Eleazar. But Ben hadn't come to see him after Vex had been arrested, or when he and Rodrigo were on trial, or when they waited in the carriage outside the cathedral's jeering crowd.
You can't expect Ben to betray his father,
Rodrigo had told him. Vex had known the truth in that, because he was manacled in a carriage next to his own father, ready to die for him. But Eleazar was wrong. No matter that he was Ben's father, Ben had to see that. He would see it and stop this because they were Erman's and that mattered too. Vex slammed his eyes shut now. God damn it, he would not give in to this. He didn't have to feel the emotions from that past, because it wasn't Devereaux Bell's past. Or so he'd been telling himself every day, sometimes every minute for 6 years. Another shudder crept up Vex's back, but he didn't have the energy to hide this one. Lou moved next to him. He looked at her and winced in realization.
I should have negotiated. They'll kill us for trespassing on their ship.
Vex swallowed.
Especially now. If Eleazar is here.
Argrid had come to finish the war for Grace Lorray. The worst of everything they'd feared was happening. But Lou didn't say anything. She fingered his shirt sleeve. Vex's heart faltered.
Lou, you don't have to.
She snaked her arms around him, her chin resting on his shoulder. Shock paralyzed him, but he regrouped, holding her as if she'd dissolve if he touched her too hard. She stayed until he relaxed. Until they both did. Ben kept his self-control even when he saw Yakis on the next level, waiting for him.
What did you say to him?
Yakis asked.
Pious God, help us, how is this possible?
Ben wanted to scream, to shove Yakis away from standing so close to him. But all he said was,
Remember your place, Defensor.
Yakis came to a halt, and Ben left, rushing for the middle deck. He shoved his way into the laboratory. Gunner's cot was made despite the late hour, shadows flashing over it as he walked the length of the chain that hooked his ankle to the wall. Yakis is doing, claiming that if Gunner had repented, he must earn his freedom. Though it made working with Gunner like working alongside a leashed feral wolf who could, if he one day chose, combust into flames. Gunner whirled when the door opened. The candle flame on the table heaved.
What happened? There was shouting.
Gunner's hands clenched, relaxed, clenched again, seeking a weapon that his servant uniform didn't have. Ben ignored him, slammed the door, and stumbled forward. He caught himself on the table along the rear wall, and a vial of Alova pipe fell over with a clank. Paxman was alive. His cousin was alive. Too much had been taken. Too many foundations had given to sand for Ben to trust this. A vial smacked into the side of Ben's head. He shot a frown at Gunner, who held another empty vial poised to throw. His chain didn't let him reach the whole room.
What happened?
Gunner asked with the inflection of a man trying to speak to an insect.
Nothing that concerns you.
I am on this boat. It concerns me. We are attacking now?
No.
Gunner said a word in his language that Ben had heard him utter at least a dozen times before. He took it to mean asshole, idiot, or some combination of the two. A knock on the door and it opened, framing Yakis in the doorway. He spared Gunner enough attention to see that his chain was fastened.
Your father is waiting for you in the captain's quarters, Yakis said.
Ben crossed his arms, feigning indifference.
And Paxman?
Being brought up now.
Ben nodded.
Tell my father I'll be there soon.
Yakis hesitated, clearly expecting to escort Ben. But after a long pause, he left.
Benje,
Gunner said when the door closed. With his heavy accent, it came out more as Benje.
Do not leave me here without information.
Ben got halfway to the door before he took pity on Gunner.
My cousin has risen from the dead,
he said, glad it sounded as unbelievable as it felt.
Which is miraculous, considering the church burned him for heresy 6 years ago.
Heresy,
Gunner parroted.
You can use him. How?
Use him? He was dead. I watched him die.
Gunner shrugged.
Church tried to kill him, and he survived. Either Church let him live or your father did. This could change things.
Gunner was right, damn him. Ben had been lied to. He knew that by now. But he'd assumed he'd uncovered the extent of the lies. Eleazar had staged the death. It was the only explanation that made sense. But gaping questions remained. Paxben had been caught in Rodrigo's treason. He clearly held no loyalty to Eleazar, unless Paxben's defiance had been a ruse. Ben needed to figure out where Paxben's loyalties did lie before Eleazar truly had him killed or manipulated this event to benefit himself. But doing so meant plowing through the other emotions that crowded Ben's chest like boulders in a valley after a landslide. A vial rebounded off his sternum, this one hard enough to leave a bruise.
"Go,"
Gunnar boomed.
"I did not agree to wait here letting the enemy win battles."
Another vial. But this time Ben caught it and whipped it back at Gunnar before he left. Moments after his cousin had resurfaced, he was planning how best to use him. Paxben was right. Leadership did agree with him. 31. The main deck was alive with defensors. Those from the Astuto, as well as a dozen more from the Desapiadado. The first sign that Eleazar was aboard. Most sent Ben sharp salutes and calls of "Prince Benyat" in cracking tones. Eleazar wanted to know he was approaching. The captain's cabin was under the quarterdeck, a spacious chamber with tables for charting and mahogany shelves of nautical equipment. Thick carpets and padded chairs made the room comfortable, elevated by gold trimmings and a replica of Argrid's symbol in polished wood on the back wall. Ben had spent little time here, entrusting the voyage to the man Eleazar had selected as the Astuto's captain. So it didn't feel as intrusive as it might have, seeing Eleazar take over the finest room on the boat. Yakis stood at attention by one of the large windows, shuttered to hide the lights within the room. The rest of the defensors here were from Eleazar's own guard. Eleazar himself sat behind the desk, under the decorative crest of Argrid, speaking with another defensor. The door behind Ben closed. Eleazar looked up. Ben spoke first.
"I thought we were working together now."
Apparently, he was going with anger as his guiding emotion. Harder to play off, but he was barely hanging on to composure enough to be angry, not sobbing. Eleazar's eyebrows lifted.
"You kept him alive,"
Ben pressed on.
"You had an agent on Grace Luray, one who could have been useful in doing the pious god's work, and you—"
It was a guess, a wild, furious stab into the night, so when Eleazar held his hand up, Ben froze with terror. Eleazar lowered his hand.
"Your cousin was too erratic to be useful. I didn't inform you that he was alive because there was nothing to gain from it, and it has been clear for some time that the pious god wishes me to do away with him. He will now be dealt with."
The lanterns around the room were thick squares of glass with gaps to feed oxygen. But Ben tasted bitter smoke, ash filling his lungs. The man beside Eleazar cleared his throat, and Eleazar stood.
"Of course. Benyat, as you have pointed out, it is beneficial to you to know the moves of the pious god on Grace Luray. General Ibarra has been instrumental in our plan."
Ben refocused on the man his father had been speaking with, not a defensor. Ben had seen General Ibarra only once or twice, as Ibarra had spent most of his time on Grace Luray, leading the war charge. Last Ben had seen him, Argrid's nobility had gathered to send off the contingent bound for the treaty negotiations in Nudiza. Ben nodded at Ibarra, then realized he'd have to react more if he wanted to hold his cover.
"General, I thank you for your service. It is not an easy war to fight."
Ibarra bowed.
"With you assisting us, we will at long last fulfill Argrid's great destiny on this godforsaken island."
But Eleazar was already talking.
"My contacts have proven true supporters of the pious god, and have delivered us plants for your use, Benyat. Defensors are unloading them now."
Ben had to forcibly pull himself away from memories of the headiness of smoke, burned corpses, and Paxben's smile.
"Your contacts?"
Eleazar waved behind Ben. The door opened, a burst of sea air chasing away some of the smoke stench.
The Mecht Stream Raider Syndicate. Thanks to their visit, we have convinced them to aid us. They have given themselves over to our grid and the cause of purifying the world.
Ben's mouth opened. The Mecht Stream Raider Syndicate? A visit? The memory hit so hard he fought to stay upright. He saw visitors weeks ago. The Mechts they'd begged for aid hadn't been diplomatic officials, as Ben had thought, as Eleazar had told him. They'd been raiders from Grace Lorray.
Praise the pious God,
Ben said, the words cutting his tongue.
Indeed. Ah, here we are. Benyat, Ibarra, you are dismissed.
Ben turned, numb,
and stopped.
Paxben, wrists and ankles in manacles, shuffled into the room. The girl trailed him, her dark features bent in an iron-clad expression of ferocity. Defensors prodded Paxben to stop paces from Eleazar and Ibarra, behind the desk. The girl stumbled into Paxben and pressed her hand on his back to right herself. Her eyes shifted over Paxben's shoulder to Milo Ibarra.
No,
she said, ducking behind Paxben.
No!
Defensors yanked her forward, ignoring her pleas. She dropped to her knees as Ibarra bowed his farewell to the king, his eyes skimming over Paxben. The look of victory on Ibarra's face increased with a bellowing laugh.
Why, Devereaux Bell, he said.
Paxben lunged as Ibarra stepped around the table, but defensors kicked the backs of his legs, sending him to his knees.
I heard you'd escaped.
Who?
Ben asked. Ibarra dropped his gaze to the girl, who caved forward, not in submission, but more like she was trying to hide.
A stream raider nuisance on this island, Ibarra said. The man your dear returned cousin pretended to be.
Ben couldn't see Paxben's face, but wanted to see if the new name matched what his cousin had become.
What I don't understand is who she is,
Ibarra continued.
One of my informants said his love-struck daughter freed Bell, but that girl is nothing but a meek lady, Nada.
Ibarra stopped. He crouched and ripped the girl's head back, his fist tangling in her hair. Eleazar did nothing to stop him. Why would he? They were prisoners. Ben fought the instinct that wanted him to dive forward. On the edge of his awareness, he saw Yakis against the window, watching the situation. Watching him. When Ben refocused on Ibarra, he had to blink twice to clear his vision. Because this fuming, red-faced man couldn't be the same self-confident general from before. Ibarra shot to his feet, staring at the girl as his lips curled back over glinting teeth.
Adaluna Andrew,
he said like he was trying to rearrange the letters to make something new.
You conniving bitch. One of my informants said his love-struck daughter was the one who freed Bell.
Lou's mouth dropped open. One of my informants? His love-struck daughter. Pieces of her resolve had been chipping away since she had revealed her past to Vex. But that had not been destructive, so much as recognizing the ache of wounds from long ago. This was the final tap on fragile glass. The last bullet to take her down. She was coming undone.
I'm so sorry, Lulubine. I'm sorry this happened to you. It shouldn't have happened.
Her father had brought the news of the storehouse that had taken their soldiers away from the headquarters the night of the final battle. He had constructed most of the rebels' plans, their attacks and how many soldiers would fight. Kari and others had orchestrated the alliance with the Stream Raiders. Tom hadn't known of that until it was done. Milo continued talking, and Lou came too with an aching jolt. He knew who she was now, who she really was.
Spy during the revolution,
he was telling the king.
A useless coward of a girl who ran away during the final fight. She tried to make a fool of me.
I did make a fool of you, she wanted to say. The king flicked his hand up, cutting off Milo, and Vex shifted toward Lou. Eleazar squinted at her with a level of calculation, as she might study a new plant.
How can I use this, or is it of use to me?
I've heard stories of the final battle.
Eleazar touched a look to Milo.
The Stream Raiders sided with the insurgents. If I remember, it was you who ran that night. But that is no matter.
It was, in the way Eleazar scorned Milo, stepping around him, focusing on Lou. The fractured pieces vibrated in Lou's body, her heart catching itself on things she was helpless to undo.
You were the girl. The one they tortured,
Eleazar said.
No,
Vex responded.
She's a member of my crew. She's... Every word out of you is toxic, nephew. The devil's impurities have infected you.
Eleazar cupped his hands to his chest.
But your life has not been forfeit, praise the pious god. You have brought me the final key to our salvation.
Vex's face pinched. Lou watched him, unable to bring herself to look at Eleazar, whose voice carried the lilt of a man entrenched in insanity.
You gave this girl treatments,
Eleazar said.
More than enough to strike her down with shaking sickness within the year, according to you, General Ibarra.
Lou rocked, caught herself. This was new information. She knew already that ingesting large amounts of plants caused shaking sickness, but the dosage controlled how quickly it killed people. The more plants a person had, the quicker the condition would claim them. Her throat convulsed. Lazenate, Awasia, Croxy. More and more until her mouth had burned and her stomach had felt scraped raw. Too much, she had known even then.
Yet she survived, again according to you, Ibarra.
Lou looked up at Milo, who stood off to the side.
Yes,
he stated.
It's her, my king.
Eleazar smiled.
Then we have indeed been delivered. Father?
Lou had forgotten the prince was in the room.
My son!
Eleazar clapped the prince on the shoulder.
You will figure out how this girl survived the disease that comes from magic overuse. With that information, you should have all you need to create the tonics as ordained by the pious god.
Vex had told her Eleazar was desperate for the shaking sickness cure. But seeing the joy on the king's face made Lou realize with horror how dangerous she was. She knew how to cure people when they had too much magic. She could keep test subjects alive as Eleazar tortured them in his experiments. Permanent magic was not impossible. The Mechts had manipulated Eye of the Sun in such a way. So he might one day figure out how to make any magic permanent. With Lou's help.
But, Ibarra.
Eleazar didn't look back at him, his eyes going in an unspoken command to the defenders behind Lou. She heard them move, reaffirming their position, and Milo rose straighter.
You said this girl was the daughter of one of your informants, and yet you didn't know her identity. Your informant didn't tell you that his daughter was the girl from that final battle, and that she had miraculously survived without succumbing to shaking sickness. Why is that?
Milo's jaw bobbled open. His eyes fell to Lou with an accusatory glare, as though he was realizing the true weight of her presence in his life. She had made him look a fool when he'd been unable to break her as a child. She had made him look a fool now, when she'd proven his inability to recognize details, and more, his inability to control his informants. Had Tom known the gravity of what Lou had endured? Either he hadn't realized what it meant that she hadn't gotten shaking sickness, or he'd protected her. Neither option gave Lou relief. She saw Tom smiling at her in a moldy cellar.
Kari doesn't know about this enemy. It will be so helpful to her, to the war.
This is why you're my Lulu Bean, because you can keep a secret so well, it's as if you took a magic plant that sealed your lips. Now, just a quick trip. You won't see a thing, I promise.
Lou had murdered for her father. Had spied for him. Secret missions that Kari hadn't known of, because Tom had stroked her head and smiled at her and loved her. She had told herself they were enemies. She killed out of self-defense, but once, it had been intent. She had reasoned it all away as Tom had told her.
They're enemies, darling. Their deaths will help the war.
But which side of the war had it helped? Who had she killed? She heaved, her stomach folding inside out, but as she bent double over herself, she became so aware, too aware, of how she was kneeling before Milo.
Clear the room,
said Eleazar.
Not you, Ibarra. We must discuss your shortcomings. Benya, do what you must with this new tool. Defensors, dispose of my nephew.
The prince made a trill of objection.
We may yet need him, father. Let him live until I can figure out the girl's compliance.
Eleazar nodded.
Bring him to the cells, then.
As the room awoke, Milo's glare remained on Lou, a hatred that she drowned in. She was at his mercy again. Manacled and a prisoner, with guards grabbing her arms, the prince saying,
To my laboratory, chain her with my assistant.
Suddenly it was 5 years ago, and she huddled next to Annalisa, watching as fate hunted her. No, she'd thought that night in the headquarters. Whatever fate is coming, it is not Annalisa's, it is mine. Mine alone. She had known she deserved few of the good things she had gotten. Her skin was too soaked with blood, stained in ways she could never wash out. And that had been when she thought she'd killed people who at least deserved it, in some awful way. But now? What had she done? Had she killed innocent Grace Lorraeans, threats who Argrid wanted out of the way? Had she murdered people who might have helped the revolution end sooner? As Lou looked at Vex, seeing the wild panic in his eye, she went without a fight. The Argridians would try to use him against her if she fought, so she wouldn't. She needed to hold out long enough for Khansu to rescue him. Tenacity settled over her, suffocating but familiar. She had always known her fate, the last few years when she'd pretended to have a normal life. There it had waited, a shadow on the outskirts of her every thought, the knowledge that she did not deserve ease and normalcy. She had made this her future the moment she had obeyed her father. Now that she knew the extent of what she had done, a strange calm descended over her. This was what she deserved, punishment and pain. It was righter now than it had ever been. Vex's panic raged when she stood. He scrambled up, held back by defensors.
Don't give in to what they want, he cried. Lou! Lou!
They took her back out into the briny air. Lou twisted her hands so her palms faced up, holding pools of moonlight.
Fight!
Vex cried behind her.
They'll destroy you!
But she knew the truth. I've been destroyed for years.
32. Ben should have gone after the girl. Adeluna, Milo had called her. For the sake of his cover, he needed to march to the laboratory and examine her, or pretend to pick apart how she had kept herself from getting shaking sickness. Which did pique Ben's curiosity. She kept herself from getting shaking sickness? How is it possible? Ben hung back outside the captain's cabin until the defensors hauled Adeluna and Paxpin below decks. Yakis talked with Eleazar's men near the railing, so Ben stayed by the door, counting the waves that broke, listening to his father berate Milo Ibarra within the closed room. He reached 20 waves and moved. Two defensors guarded the cells on the level above outside the hatch. They came to attention when he approached.
No one is to disturb me,
Ben told them, shutting the hatch as he descended. Stupid what he was doing, but he was desperate. Paxman stood in the center of the same locked cell as before, hands slung in his pockets, posture relaxed. When Ben stopped outside the cell, he saw his cousin shiver.
What did you do with her?
Paxman asked.
She'll be safe, I promise.
They were alone. For the first time in more than 6 years.
Paxman, I'm Vex.
What?
My name.
Paxman looked as though he was trying for ease, but his words came out hard.
It isn't Paxman, it's Vex, or Devereaux, if you'd like.
The name got stuck in Ben's throat.
Fine, I need to tell you.
Wouldn't kill you to put some furniture in here.
Paxman cut him off again.
Even the cells in New Deza have benches.
Would you?
I suspect these aren't made for long-term prisoner accommodation, though.
Pax! Devereaux!
Ben grabbed the bars of the cell, fighting to keep from shouting and alerting the defenders above.
Would you listen to me? I need to No.
Paxman met his heave forward.
No, Ben, you don't need to apologize or help me or do anything.
Don't throw your life away on me. I won't let you.
Ben's jaw bobbled open.
You're trying to protect me? Why?
Paxman chuckled dryly.
He's your father. You love him. But I know you love me too, so I'm not making you choose. I never wanted to put you in that situation.
Never wanted to.
Ben closed his eyes in realization. That was why Paxman had never told him of Eleazar's madness. Why he had never invited him into Rodrigo's plotting. The Ben who Paxman had known would have cried heresy and run to Eleazar, asking his father if it was true. Ben had had to watch Rodrigo and Paxman die to realize Argrid wasn't perfect.
I was so stupid, Pax,
Ben whispered, not caring that he'd said the wrong name. He wasn't talking to this Paxman. He was talking to the one from years ago, who had struggled as church defenders dragged him to the stake, but had never once screamed for Ben's help. Not while Rodrigo had shouted for Eleazar.
All this time, I let it happen. I was guilty and afraid, and I didn't think there was another way. I gave up.
He opened his eyes and grabbed the bars.
I helped kill people,
Ben continued.
I helped kill you. I might not be able to do anything to stop them, not yet. But I'm not ignorant anymore. I'm sorry, Pax, Devereaux, Vex, whoever you want to be.
Ben deflated, head bowed.
I'm sorry.
It's about damn time.
Ben blinked to find Paxman grinning. Of all the reactions he'd expected, angry yelling, sulking, resentment, a smile had not been one of them.
I told my father,
Paxman faltered, saying the word with a discernible hitch,
that you'd be better than Eleazar. The whole time we were helping the rebels, I was doing it for you, you idiot. I knew you'd be a king worth fighting for. I've barely begun to make amends for everything I've let happen,
Ben argued.
And you're speaking of kingship? You've seen how far Eleazar's reach extends.
Paxman nodded, solemn.
I know.
Of course, I didn't mean... I don't know what to do. Our country is ill. Where is the source? What do I do to heal it? And you come back.
He blew out a breath.
I realize more each day how little control I have over anything.
Paxman offered a weak smile, a cracked memory of a time long past.
I wrote to you,
Paxman whispered, then laughed at himself.
I knew I'd never send the letters, but I needed to talk to you. I told you about your father's plans and what my father and I had tried to do. I told you about the night they raided our estate. I told you about the church's holding cells and what they did and how...
Paxman's hand went to his eye patch. Ben's gaze landed on it, and he realized that he'd let himself ignore it. Not to embarrass Paxman, he thought, or not to wallow in my own guilt.
I told you everything,
Paxman continued.
I imagined you reading the letters. I imagined you understanding, and I've had this exact conversation with you so many times, Ben. I imagined everything you could say to me.
Even this?
Ben waved at himself, at the fearful, incapable man he was. Paxman grinned.
I always told myself I'd be so damn relieved you were on my side that I wouldn't care. We could conquer anything together.
Ben's grip on the bars went lax. The cell melted away, the ship and Grace LeRae beyond, nothing intruding on a moment Ben had never thought he'd get again.
Ermon,
Ben said, his throat swelling. I've missed you. Paxman's smile faded.
Para sempre,
he returned. Forever. I've missed you, too. The room where the defensors deposited Lou was on a high enough deck that it had porthole windows letting in the moonlight. In that dimness, Lou could make out tables of supplies, cupboards glinting with vials. The familiarity of a laboratory would have been comforting if she had been capable of feeling anything beyond the shackles grating her wrists and the memories of everything her father had told her. The defensors bound her to a chair and left, shutting the door so the only noise was the quiet shushing of waves beyond the walls. Behind her, chains rattled. Lou shot up straighter, unable to look too far behind. Had the prince gotten to the room before her? Would her interrogation begin already in the dark when she couldn't see any of it approaching? Her pulse hammered. Though she wanted to use her normal methods of inducing calm, she bit back the desire. Tom had taught her those methods. The chain clanking was followed by a voice, hoarse and rich, accented with the Mechtlin lilt.
You caused the chaos on deck.
Lou clenched her hands on the chair's arms. Not the prince. He'd said something about an assistant, hadn't he? If he had a Mecht as an assistant, the prince could be close, too close, to making magic permanent. But if the man was his ally, why would the prince have chained him? The Argridians could be playing on her sympathies to get her to share secrets. She stayed silent. The Mecht grunted at her refusal to speak.
Fine.
A long while passed before the laboratory's door opened. In that time, Lou heard the splash of water and bark of orders. Eleazar leaving and taking Milo, she hoped. The door squealed open and the prince entered, light filtering from his lantern. Defensors attempted to follow him, but he shut the door on them as if their mere presence annoyed him. The chains behind Lou rattled, the Mecht prisoner rising up.
Gunner, has she spoken?
The prince asked, his eyes on Lou.
No.
The prince set the lantern on the table beside Lou along with something that he dropped with a dull thunk. Her book, Botanical Wonders of the Grace LeRae Colony.
I haven't seen one of these in years,
the prince whispered, speaking unsurprisingly in proper Argridian. He adjusted the flame higher, casting light on his face and the equipment on the table beside him. An impressive arrangement, one organized by a mind that understood botanical magic more than Lou would expect of an Argridian, especially the prince. The prince caught her appraisal but didn't smile, shifting so he leaned against the table.
I'm Ben, he said.
Lou frowned, but it was better than prince, as though she owed him allegiance.
You are Adeluna Andrew, or Lou,
Ben continued,
I've been told.
Confusion made her frown retreat. He pressed on, tired, like he had single-handedly rode here from Deeza.
I have something I would like to propose to you.
Her nostrils flared.
I will not help the—
Not for my father, for me. Or, well, for the rest of the world. I'm not that arrogant.
Behind her, Gunner huffed.
You have no reason to trust me,
Ben said.
But do you trust Pax Devereaux?
Lou kept her face blank, her body still. Ben leaned forward, knocking botanical wonders back as he moved.
He said to tell you to...
He wrote